Hello, I'm Christopher Badger.
And I'm Mark Davis.
We're barristers at Six Pump Court, and we'd like to welcome you to the latest Environment Law News podcast, brought to you in association with LexisNexis. In this podcast, we look at further developments in the birth of the new Office for Environmental Protection, the European Commission's latest publication on pharmaceuticals in the environment, and next to nothing in the spring statement. First, we look at the continued development of the Environment Bill and the new Office for Environmental Protection.
Yes, this time it was the turn of the Environmental Audit Committee to hear from Michael Gove and Therese Coffey on the draft Environment, Principles and Governance Bill, in particular on the development of the Office for Environmental Protection.
Hang on, Mark. Did we not cover this last month?
Aha, an easy mistake to make, Chris, but no. Last month, we reported on the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs Committee's review of the proposed funding and form of the Office for Environmental Protection.
So this is a different review?
It's a different committee, but covering largely the same topic.
And has anything changed?
Well, there have been some significant developments. In particular, the Welsh Government has announced a 12-week consultation seeking views on how to address governance gaps in environmental principles and governance relating to Wales when the UK leaves the European Union.
Isn't that a little late in the day?
Well, it's earlier than an indicative vote.
Yes, but the closing date for the consultation is the 9th of June. Surely the UK will have already Brexited by then.
Well, who knows on that score? But the real point is that it isn't settled that devolved governments will agree to the proposed Office for Environmental Protection having regulatory oversight over their environmental arrangements. Scotland has its own consultation out at the moment, which it published back in February on precisely the same issue.
And why is that significant?
Well, because Michael Gove recently proposed in his evidence to the Environmental Audit Committee that the OEP could be based in Aberdeen. Now, he advanced this suggestion on the basis that Aberdeen is currently the location of one of the two offices of the Joint Nature Conservation Committee, and moreover, that Aberdeen had been raised with him by Fergus Ewing, Scotland's Cabinet Secretary for the Rural Economy.
But surely that's only practicable in circumstances where the Scottish Government agree to oversight of its devolved responsibilities by the OEP.
Quite, and don't mention the potential carbon footprint.
Any other interesting developments?
Two, actually. First, DEFRA has appointed a head of the interim Green Watchdog to record breaches of environmental law until the post-Brexit OEP is up and running. And Michael Gove has just announced that Professor Richard McCrory will take up the role. And second, there is to be a direct link in the Environment Bill to improvements in biodiversity.
Well, the latter comes at a critical time. A report just released by the Joint Nature Conservation Committee has found that the UK will miss almost all of its 2020 nature targets that it signed up to a decade ago, set by the Global Convention on Biodiversity, with some targets proving particularly challenging, including those on pollution, vulnerable ecosystems, and on restoring damaged ecosystems.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing, isn't it? All the more force to the argument for legally binding environmental outcomes and improvements to be part of the new Environment Bill, rather than a simple requirement for ministers to only have regard to environmental principles. For the moment, it's come on new committees.
Second, we turn our eyes to the European Commission's most recent publication on pharmaceuticals in the environment. On the 11th of March, the Commission published its strategic approach to pharmaceuticals in the environment. The approach satisfies a requirement imposed by Article 8C of the Priority Substances Directive that the Commission must propose a strategic approach to the pollution of water by pharmaceutical substances. It starts by noting that whilst the treatment of many diseases in humans and animals relies on access to effective pharmaceuticals, the pollution caused by some is an emerging problem, with well-documented evidence of risks to the environment, and in relation to antimicrobial resistance, human health.
Yes, in relation to the environment, the approach records an example of the damage of pharmaceutical pollution as the exposure of male fish to such concentrations of the main ingredient in the contraceptive pill that the fish become feminized and unable to reproduce. Now, those with long memories may recall that in 2007, endocrines, which are hormones to most of us, and endocrine disruptors were blamed for twice as many girls being born as boys in some Arctic villages. Now, the Commission already has a strategy on endocrine disruptors. And we recently highlighted the effects of the illicit pharmaceuticals, cocaine, on eels in the Thames. Now, to my mind, coked up eels may be one thing, but the capacity of pharmaceuticals to potentially impact on the reproductive capabilities of animals, and potentially humans too, is another altogether.
And in respect of the potential impacts on human health through antimicrobial resistance, whilst these have not yet been clearly demonstrated, as the approach makes clear, there is still an issue that it is being taken seriously. So seriously, in fact, that the issue of pharmaceutical residues cannot be ignored, and is said to justify a precautionary approach consistent with the Commission's proposals to introduce a relevant parameter into the Drinking Water Directive. Here, the approach notes that of particular concern are the possible emissions from some antimicrobial manufacturing plants in third countries, which could be contributing to the development and spread of antimicrobial resistance at a global level.
Yes, and the approach notes that whilst more information is required to understand the levels of risk posed by pharmaceutical pollution, its stated and main objectives are to, firstly,
identify actions to be taken or further investigated to address the potential risks from pharmaceutical residues in the environment, not least to contribute to the Union's action on combating antimicrobial resistance.
Secondly, to encourage innovation where it can help to address the risks and promote the circular economy by facilitating the recycling of resources such as water, sewage sludge and manure.
To identify knowledge gaps and present possible solutions for filling them.
And finally, to ensure that actions to address the risk do not jeopardise access to safe and effective pharmaceutical treatments for human patients and animals.
Encouragingly, the Commission's approach is not limited to pharmaceutical producers, but instead takes a holistic approach, encompassing medical professionals, water treatment plants, the agriculture industry and governments, all of whom will be required to meet the challenges posed. There doesn't appear to be a need to be stocking up on willow bark immediately, but this is certainly one area to keep an eye on. Our final story concerns Philip Hammond's spring statement. Is that your hip again?
No, Chris, sadly not. It's the frustration that results from nothing of any substance arising from yet another budget announcement.
Just blame Brexit. That's what I do.
But you simply can't. The 25-year environment plan promises so much, but there is so little in terms of actual policy initiative that are going to deliver on those environmental promises.
But it isn't nothing. There's going to be a comprehensive global review of the link between biodiversity and economic growth. And there's going to be a future homes standard mandating the end of fossil fuel heating systems in all new houses from 2025. There are also proposals to require an increased proportion of green gas in the grid, with a view to advancing decarbonisation of the mains gas supply.
It's just all small change, I'm afraid. It remains a fact that this spring statement was extremely weak, yet again, on environmental policies. It is impossible to escape the feeling that the government is still highly dependent on the role of the private sector to spearhead environmental progress through innovation, research and development, and that the government lacks any concrete plan on just how to meet the UK's environmental obligations in the future, particularly, I would say, in the area of climate change.
But we've still got David Attenborough. Look at the effect that public pressure is having on plastic use. Environmental corporate reporting, sustainable finance. Blue Planet trumps the government every time.
Well, I don't disagree that progress as a consequence of reputational drivers is one thing, but it's economics that drives long-term improvements. Forgive me, but a 10p plastic bag tax is hardly innovative.
But change is on the horizon. The Environment Bill is being drafted. The policy statement on environmental principles is currently being written. There are global initiatives in place at the moment that examine green finance, the sustainability of fashion, chemicals, pharmaceutical regulation, environmental risk management. Environmental protections in international treaties is high on the agenda in this environmentally conscious world. This is a very exciting time to be an environmental lawyer.
So, quite simply, why can't that manifest itself as an economic policy?
You really need to get that hip looked at. Thank you for tuning in for this Environment Law News podcast. For more information on any of these stories, or if you'd like to discuss any of the topics raised in more detail, please contact Six Pump Court on 0207 797 8400, asking for either Christopher Badger or Mark Davies, or contact our colleagues at LexisNexis in the PSL Environment team.